Trying to call a meeting to order. We do have the chair, the vice chair, and the ranking minority member, so at least, and of course, Representative Leader has always been on time, so we are grateful for that. And we have a full agenda of bills, and we're just going to jump in with House File 262. Representative Scalzi, would you like to?
Yes, and I would like to move for consideration for the Capital Investment Committee House File 262.
That bill is before us, and Representative Greiling, do you have some introductory comments? Welcome to the committee, and as your guests speak, they will introduce themselves.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I will definitely let the guests speak for themselves and take up the bulk of the time because those of us who are here are in for a real treat, as Representative Scalzi and Madam Chair and I know, because we had the privilege a couple months ago of touring the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center, which is in Roseville, that Representative Scalzi and I both represent, and it is a unique facility that actually touches your heart, and I think with that I will turn it over to Mr. Jenny, who will tell us more about it.
And members, I should just give you my past history. When I first knew of the Wildlife Rehab Center, it was, in fact, in my district on the St. Paul campus of the University of Minnesota. And they wanted very much to stay there because veterinary students from the university spent a lot of time there. And we actually, at the time, worked very hard with the university to see if we could find a permanent home for them there. And finally had to give up on that, and so now we have it in a new location. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Jenny.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Greiling, committee staff, and guests. My name is Phil Jenny. I'm the Executive Director of the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. I'd like to take a few minutes first this afternoon highlighting a few of the things that are in the materials that you've gotten in your packet, and focus a little bit more clearly on why we're here. And also Dr. Karen Chinoy is with me, and she'll talk a little bit about her experience as both a student and a now teacher at WRC. And then we'd like to close with a short 3-minute DVD, which sort of puts me in a position of, they always say, don't follow children and animals. Well, you know, that's the problem I find myself in. First, a little background. WRC started out in 1979 as a student organization at the University of Minnesota College of Veterinary Medicine. In 1997, WRC legally separated from the university and was chartered as an independent 501c3 organization. So we're technically an independent nonprofit organization. We remained on campus after that separation, but our campus facility was declared partially condemned. And in 2000, as Representative Hausman indicated, we started to look for a new site. And about that fall, we actually, and it's interesting that Bob Berkshire is here today from the city of St. Paul, because without him, we wouldn't be in Roseville. Bob was the director of Roseville Parks at that time. And through the city of Roseville, we agreed to a land lease on a site in Central Park adjacent to the Harriet Alexander Nature Center. And with negotiations with the university, we were allowed to stay on the campus until the end of 2002. We initiated a private fundraising campaign to meet the contractual obligations. We then, though, were forced to borrow a little over $1 million so we could finish on time and also move into our new state-of-the-art facility in January of 2003. Now, excuse me, since 1979, since our inception, we've treated over 100,000 injured and orphaned wild animals. But nearly 40,000 of those, so 40% of our total patients, have come in the last 4 years since we've moved into our new facility. Most of you are probably aware of the pelican plight this winter, in which a gentleman rescued about a dozen pelicans off of Pelican Lake in Minnesota. It certainly caught the attention of the public, but I'm fond of telling that was 12 pelicans. That story is actually repeated thousands of times every year. Last year, we admitted 8,585 orphaned animals from 160 different species of animals. And of those 160 species, 75 different species, we only got one. So you can see the broad breadth of wildlife medicine that we have to perform. And also, taking care of that many animals requires a great deal of personnel and resources. We have 14 staff members, 40 student interns, and about 500 volunteers. And we do all of that on an annual operating budget of $600,000. And there's no doubt that without the facility we're in now, we would not be one of the leading wildlife teaching hospitals in the country. And the bill before you today, House File 262, is a one-time request to the state for assistance in retiring the remaining $600,000 on our $2 million facility and to finish some important educational infrastructure. We think there are five reasons that make this a high-leverage investment for the state. First is public access. WRC is the only publicly available facility in the state that is licensed to handle all species of animals. And I mentioned we had 160 different species last year. About 80% of all the animals that are rehabilitated in Minnesota are treated at WRC. And the demand for our service has increased rapidly. As I mentioned, the nearly 8,600 animals that we treated last year represents about a 25% increase in the amount of cases that we have since we moved to our new facility in 2003. I think this is significant. All the animals that come to us are brought to us by members of the public. We don't actually go out and get anything. And in 2006, more than 500 people brought animals to us. And these people came from 234 different communities in Minnesota and from 50 of our 87 counties. And we also handle anywhere from 15,000 to 20,000 phone calls a year answering questions about wildlife-related issues. Now, even injured wild animals in the state that don't come directly to our facility benefit from us being here. WRC consults with rehabilitators and veterinary clinics in all parts of Minnesota. So beyond the public access, another important part that we have, and I think this is one of the key things that we've been able to do in our new facility that we weren't able to before, and that's we have significant statewide, indeed national and even international impact on professional education. In the last few years, WRC veterinarians have begun to play a prominent role in wildlife medicine. Wildlife medicine is a rapidly growing field of interest in veterinary schools, yet there's almost no curriculum on wildlife medicine. To address this, WRC and the College of Veterinary Medicine at the university have developed a series of initiatives to help introduce and teach wildlife medicine to veterinary students. Even if they don't go directly into the field, and after all, Karen has one of the few paid jobs in wildlife medicine, many of these future veterinarians will still need the background in wildlife medicine to work with their clients, because their clients often look to them as their first resource on animal issues. And as our population expands more and more into outer regions, there's more and more conflict and interaction between people and animals, and more animals are getting injured, and we're there to not only help people who bring animals to us, but also those veterinary clinics who sometimes deal with it. As I mentioned today, Karen Chenoy is with me. Karen is a WRC veterinarian. She's trained at the University of Minnesota. She's recently elected to serve on the board of directors of the National Wildlife Rehabilitators Association. This year alone, she's conducted wildlife medicine courses here at the University of Minnesota and also at the University of Georgia and the University of Wisconsin. She serves as adjunct faculty at the university and also manages our vet education programs at WRC. I've asked Karen today to talk a little bit about her experience as a student and now professor at WRC.
Dr. Chenoy, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Phil. I'm excited to talk with you today. I, as Phil mentioned, would like to share my story of my involvement at the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. In 1997 is where my story begins. I started college at the University of Minnesota as an undergraduate student at that time, and soon after inquired about volunteering at WRC. At that time, I had already decided that I wanted to pursue a career in veterinary medicine and was eager to explore opportunities in the field, particularly those involving exotic and wildlife species. The opportunity to perform hands-on work with wildlife that many people really only get the chance to read about fueled my passion for working with animals. Over the years, I participated in the work of WRC in several capacities, and by the time I was a vet student, I knew I would make a career of wildlife medicine. As a student in the College of Veterinary Medicine at the U of M, I was forced to make my own opportunities to further my knowledge in the field of wildlife medicine. I spent countless hours working at WRC and also completed internships at several wildlife hospitals around the country. A year before I graduated from the vet school, WRC moved into the new facility that we are in today. The larger, high-tech facility allowed our organization to blossom into the first-class wildlife hospital that we always knew that we could be. And with this notoriety and increased visibility that the new facility created came increased funding. I was very fortunate that the funding enabled me to continue my work at WRC after graduation, now as a staff veterinarian. When accepting this new position, I definitely did not realize how much time I would spend teaching others or how much I would enjoy doing that. Over the course of 2007, I will teach about 40 training courses or informational sessions for veterinarians, veterinary technicians, wildlife rehabilitators, the WRC staff, interns, volunteers, and members of the public. I am perhaps most excited to be able to teach at the University of Minnesota College of Veterinary Medicine. As an adjunct faculty member, I give wildlife medicine lectures and conduct a wildlife elective course at WRC for veterinary students. Through these programs, I am able to give back and make opportunities for vet students that I did not have as a veterinary student. Thank you.
And did I hear it? I seem to recall that in the summer there is a course taught for which students receive credit. And the site is your center.
Yep. Yeah, and that's definitely something that we would not be able to offer had we not moved into this brand new facility. Phil mentioned our old facility was partially condemned, so that was something that was not possible.
I was there in the condemned structure.
Yes.
Ms. Jenny, any further?
If I could, please,
real
briefly. We could actually spend all of our time and all of the rest of the committee's time just talking about those education opportunities that we do provide. But I also wanted to touch on a few other things I think that are important when we talk about WRC's statewide significance. And one of the first is disease surveillance. We have a very large patient load, and that really provides a very effective early warning system to detect environmental changes and health threats. You know, just open the paper and you see the threat of things like Asian bird flu, an example of those growing number of potentially zoonotic diseases that are transferred from animals to humans. Rehabbers are quite often on the front lines of that kind of surveillance. In addition, we're also starting to play a much more broader role in other environmental partnerships. We've been leaders in the new Lights Out program that just was announced in the last week that's designed to protect migrating birds from the damages from large glass buildings. The other thing is we're one of the few facilities in the country that can handle wildlife injured by oil spills. And in fact, later this week, Karen is lecturing on the treatment of wild animals affected by oil and other environmental contaminants at the Minnesota Air, Waste, and Water Environmental Conference that PCA is doing. And finally, we provide care for endangered and threatened species like trumpeter swans and Blanding's turtles. And our facility has been approved by the International Crane Foundation to help rescue and treat any wayward cranes in the new whooping crane program. And while we provide a lot of these critical statewide services, some of these cost us directly, but we actually get no reimbursement for those things. We receive no payment for treatment of trumpeter swans, for instance, which can sometimes cost us up to $200 a day. And as you mentioned, students actually earn credits from the University Vet School at WRC, and we don't see any of that tuition money. I wanted to just briefly, if I may, also talk about our about the funding of the facility. This isn't our first stop in an effort to fund this facility. In fact, this is our last phase. When the new facility was made possible entirely by private support, we conducted two fundraising campaigns, and in your packet there's a list of all of the contributors. You'll see that many of the Twin Cities leading philanthropists are on there, as well as hundreds of others. There's 800 total people who contributed to the two campaigns for this building fund. That's a lot of money. We raise significant money for an organization of our type. Our annual budget is also supported entirely by private contributions. We receive no public sector operating support. 83% of our support comes directly from the public and about 15% from local foundations and corporations. In 2006, about 3,400 people actually gave us money, and since we've moved into our new building, there are about 8,500 people who have donated to WRC. And I have to say, I like that. I like the fact that we need to provide good public support to earn our keep. It keeps us nimble and, I think, responsive to the public. However, the long-term debt on our facility is inhibiting our ability to respond to what's really a vastly growing demand on our services. And we want to be in a position to put all of our growth into taking care of animals and the people who care about them. And
now we have an audio piece. I'd
love to show the DVD for
you.
Let's see. Karen, you want to... And can we maybe bring the lights down? Just end it up. Not the beginning, to where the
So we need to
I'm sure we're some buffer.
Had I known.
Well, this year we're on pace to treat 8,300 animals. First and foremost, we're a wild animal hospital. And as a hospital, we really believe in sort of the animal Hippocratic Oath. If you care enough about something to rescue it on the side of the highway or bring it off your deck, whether it's a sparrow or a mouse or a bobcat or a pelican, if it comes to us, it comes in our doors, we're going to do the best thing we can for that animal. At the end of the day, this business is as much about people as it is about the animals. And it says something about Minnesotans, particularly, and the amount of care and concern and just sort of passion we have for the outdoors and wildlife that we exist and why we're the largest animal hospital in the country.
For that very quick and to the point education. Members, are there questions of Mr. Jenny or Dr. Chenoy? If not, we thank you for. I'm sorry, Representative Singlestad has.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't know if this is to one of the testifiers. Maybe it's to Representative Greiling. I'm just curious about the $625,000 in bond proceeds because this is. to take over a construction loan. Is that right? So I'm just, we don't usually see that kind of stuff in capital investment. Maybe you could explain further.
Madam Chair, Representative Finkelstead, yes, that is right. And I understand that that's not the usual thing. I think if we had been doing things right, we would have asked for the money, all of it, before getting to this point. But, you know, we're now asking for it at the end. And there is, there's this considerable amount of money that's already been raised. You know, this is the first time, as Mr. Jenny said, that any public money has even been asked for. So usually we like some kind of private match before we look at public money. And so I would say this project is actually more exemplary than any that we usually see before us in terms of how much private money has been put into the endeavor before asking for this public money.
And members, you may recall that when we did our historic overview, there is one column on the list that shows cash appropriations, and it is probably a project like this that doesn't fit the rules of bonding, but it is a capital investment. So, any other questions? If not, thank you very much for being with us. And now we have House File 378, and Representative Mahoney, would you move?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 378.
For possible
inclusion.
Mm-hmm. And this is the St. Paul National Great River Park Improvements, and Representative Johnson is with us, as well as Bob Bierschei, who is Director of Parks and Recreation from the City of St. Paul. Welcome to the committee, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Very, very pleased to be here today to talk about National Great River Park on the Mississippi River and our bonding bill request. National Great River Park encompasses over 3,500 acres of public parks, trails, and open space along the river, and will be a true connection to the 17 miles of Mississippi riverfront that run through St. Paul. Now, this bonding bill request before you allows us to finally complete the first phase of this project. The $3.8 million is for matching critical federal funds that have been extended and will expire this year. Over $2 million in federal funds have already gone into this project, and the last federal piece is around $2.67 million, totaling almost $5 million in federal funds to go into this project. Again, this match will allow us to complete this phase of the work. And with me today is Bob Bierschei. He's the Director of Parks and Recreation for the City of St. Paul, and he's going to take a few minutes to talk about the project in more detail.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Representative Hausman and members of the committee, and Representative Johnson. As Representative Johnson mentioned, my name is Bob Bierschei, and I have the privilege of serving as Director of Parks and Recreation for the City of St. Paul. We're here today because of the critical role that federal dollars play in the development of the National Great River Park. And as Representative Johnson mentioned, it's a significant area of parkland. And actually, St. Paul, we're very proud of the fact that we have the stewardship responsibility for 17 miles of the Mississippi River, more than any community in the entire stretch of the river in the United States. The funding request before you of $3.8 million will allow us to move forward on and complete the shoreline protection project, which we started a number of years ago. We actually had started this project, and the year that the bonding bill was entirely vetoed, it took us off our start. As Representative Johnson mentioned, upon completion, there will be over $4.85 million of federal money into the project. The riprapping that will run alongside the Mississippi River both improves and protects the environment and makes the river a more attractive and safe place to live and recreate for both families and the tourists visiting Minneapolis-St. Paul. The purpose for pursuing the bonding dollars this year is very simple. We will not meet the federal matching requirements and will lose the last piece of federal dollars if we are not successful in obtaining the support. We have the strong support of our delegation, Mayor Coleman, the St. Paul City Council, as well as the National Audubon Society, the National Park Service, the St. Paul Riverfront Development Corporation, and the Lower Phelan Corridor Coalition, which is made up of approximately 25 different organizations from throughout the East Metro area. we need your support so we can move forward on the full vision of the Great River Park. Appreciate your time. If there's any specific questions, we would certainly answer them.
Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair and Mr. Bruce, I think you actually happen to be the boss of one of my sons who works for St. Paul Parks on a part-time basis. But in your bill, and he's a good guy, by the way.
I hope to feel his future.
It's the light of his dad. But your bill on 1.8 talks about acquiring a land and then to pre-design, design, construction, finish. And your testimony said that you need the appropriations to match the federal monies this year for the land. Can you break those figures out for us?
Mr. Bierscheid.
Madam Chair and the Representative, the original request that we had last year, we actually had a request last year for the Great River Park for $12 million, and that included this portion in there and also some land acquisition. Now, because of the critical nature of the 12 acres of land last year that we had to acquire or we were going to lose it, in making that tough decision, we opted because of the timing to take and acquire that land. So that land has been acquired. This money is specifically for the riprap along the river.
So, Madam Chair, then the bill that says to acquire land is not part of your proposal for
In terms of this particular requirement, it is for the riprap and some additional of that planning that goes along with that.
Madam Chair, I understand that, and I'm trying to separate out the because the bill says to acquire land, and
Madam Chair, Representative, and we apologize for that. The language in there actually is a what we used last year, and we should have modified that portion of it.
And one follow-up, if I may, then the pre-design, design, construction, and finishing equipment, all that kind of stuff. If you don't do that this year, is there federal funds for that? Because I think you testified that if you didn't have part of the land, you'd lose federal funds.
It's the federal match that
federal
I'm
match,
trying
yeah.
to identify.
That's exactly
of the dollar amount.
Right. And what that federal match is used for.
Madam Chair and Representatives, that federal match is used for the riprap. That's specifically what that is for. And if we don't get it, we lose it.
And how much is that, Madam Chair?
That amount is the 2.6.
2.6 would be the federal dollars.
In addition to this, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other? Oh, Representative Howes has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, if I recall, you got $2.5 million in last year's bonding bill. Could you tell us, have you used all that money, and what have you used that money on so far?
Representative Hausman and Representative, we have used that money. That money was spent on the land acquisition we acquired in the National Great River Park area, 12 acres of critical natural resource land, and so that's what the money has been used for. We did have a small part of that for some of the preliminary planning to get this work done.
So that's why we don't need land acquisition anymore. Last year
that
we
is
used
correct.
The land acquisition,
that is correct.
And now the federal money and the money you're seeking here would be for the riprap.
That is correct.
Representative Howes?
Yeah, just to follow up. Has the City of St. Paul put any money into the project? And I'll ask my second question to save some time as the Met Council chimed in on this in any fashion.
Representative Hausman and Representative, the City of St. Paul, in terms of, has spent a considerable money of in-kind funds. Our engineering staff, our design staff, all of that we have paid for in terms of this project. The Metropolitan Council has participated in other portions of the riprap project, not this one because it is not in Metro Park, regional park areas.
Representative Mahoney?
Madam Chair, I don't know if this is appropriate, but to Representative Solberg's concerns, I wonder if the author would accept a verbal amendment on page 1, line 8, after the word 2, strike the language acquire land for and to pre-design, comma, design. So it would read starting on line 7, $3.8 million is appropriated from the bond proceeds fund for a grant to the City of St. Paul to construct, furnish, and equip River Park development and redevelopment infrastructure.
Would that be correct? To take out, to pre-design and design, that has all been completed.
Take out the acquisition of land. And
yeah, that'd be, I think that's a good idea. But I think it adds some clarity to the intent of the bill, which, again, is specifically for the riprap.
Representative Mahoney moves an amendment deleting on 1-8, acquire land for and to redesign design. To that amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion carries, and we've made that change to your bill. Any further questions? If not, we have that. I'm sorry, Representative Tinglestad. I'm not organized today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to be clear then, you're looking for dollars this year, not next year.
Mr. Greenstein.
Madam Chair and Representative Tinglestad, yes. This money is to, the grant from the federal government runs out at the end of September of this year.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to know if the entire Johnson delegation is
that is correct. There's unanimity.
Thank you, thank you for bringing this bill before us. We now have a quorum, and I should mention, members, we have a new committee legislative assistant, Chris Henry, with us. Lori Nissel is at a family funeral, and we're grateful for Chris Henry's assistance today. Representative Carlson, would you be willing to move the minutes? Any discussion on the minutes? Not all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries and the minutes are approved. We have House File.
Madam Chair?
Yes?
I'd like to move that House File 604 be brought before us for possible inclusion.
Representative Tinglestad moves House File 604. Representative Lane and members of that community are with us. Representative Lane, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm pleased to bring the bill for $2.5 million from the bonding proceeds fund to support Springbrook Nature Center in Fridley.
I'm just going to interrupt for a minute because the previous bill, as you see, was, in fact, the bill before us last year that was partially funded. This was a bill before us last year that was not funded in any way, and so most of the members of this committee are new, but just to give them that background.
Okay.
Representative Lane.
Thank you. I understand that it went pretty far last year to the last minute, but Springbrook Nature Center is a 127-acre nature center in Fridley, and it's owned and operated by the City of Fridley. As the metropolitan development has continued around it, it has become just a natural jewel, surrounded by development in the inner ring suburb of Fridley. And we really need to take action to protect and enhance our natural resources in the suburbs as there is continued pressure from development. They have formed a spring project, Sanctuary Protection and Renewal into the Next Generation, to enhance and prevent the Nature Center from being loved to death. The project is to enable the handling, the continued growth in visits, and enabling the concentration of much of the heavy use in the 7-acre entrance area while protecting the remaining 120 acres in a more natural state and keeping it from really being loved to death. Springbrook is a unique statewide resource. It's one of the most diverse natural areas for its size in Minnesota, and particularly in a suburban location. Much of the natural area has never been cultivated or developed. It has some of the most diverse animal and plant life because of its diverse natural area. Over 2,000 different species of plants and animals live there. It is one of the first designated important birding areas in Minnesota, so designated by the Audubon Society, and because of its location and its long history of bird banding and songbird research. Springbrook conducts over 225 environmental education programs a year, including summer camps, hunter education, master naturalist programs, and others serving people from all parts of the state. It's a major provider of science education for the curriculum of the school districts in Fridley and 38 other communities around that send their students there as part of their science education curriculum. It's a wetlands resource that it very effectively filters runoff coming from Northtown and other development up there. And from the time the water enters at the front of Fridley and is, for instance, high in E. coli, to the time it leaves through the wetlands and the natural filtering process and it leaves out the back and moves into the Mississippi River, is zero E. coli has been measured there. So this is the water that Minneapolis then takes in for drinking and goes around the corner and becomes part of St. Paul's water source. So it helps to have these natural areas doing their job. Springbrook also promotes energy conservation, and the building that they will be doing will be a demonstration of green design technology in the future. So I'm very pleased to present a bill that Representative Tingelstadt brought last year. And I will introduce the mayor of Fridley.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank
Please
you.
Identify yourself.
Madam Chair, Scott Lund, Mayor of Fridley, representative, and thank you, Representative Lane, for this introduction. I don't know of any other. I need to commend our citizens, our voters here publicly, that they have created and allowed a levy to take place, even during these economic times of loss of government aid and increasing property taxation, and even with that, our voters have continued in perpetuity a referendum, a levy that has been enacted to the continuance of Springbrook Nature Center. Now we need to take it to the next level by this enhancement, because we are virtually loving it to death, and there is always constant pressures in an inner ring suburb such as ours of the use of that facility. I'll take an example, Como Park. It's a city park, beautiful park, has a lot of amenities to it. Yet I don't know probably anybody in the state of Minnesota that doesn't know about Como Park. It has much greater significance than a city park. It is regional by nature and beyond. Springbrook has a lot of similarities to that. It does not have the enhancements that Como Park has. It is one of the best kept secrets maybe in Minnesota, but it does have far-reaching significance. I think there's something in this presentation that will tell you how far-reaching, from Alaska to Australia, all over the world, in fact. Springbrook is a wonderful community asset. It is an ecological, social, education, and economic asset with greater significance than our city. Yet our city, to date, has been funding that entire operation there. With that, I'd like to introduce Donna Ball, the vice chair of the Springbrook Foundation, a foundation that is solely by volunteers that have taken it upon themselves to for the betterment of our community asset, and they're doing this out of the goodness and of their hearts. So with that, Donna Balls.
Ms. Balls, we'll get you connected to a microphone here. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott, and thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I'm Donna Balls. I'm Vice Chair of the Springbrook Nature Center Foundation. Springbrook Nature Center Foundation is a separate, nonprofit, 501c3 Friends of organization. Our mission for over 30 years has been to enhance and protect Springbrook Nature Center. In 2000, we began to assess and plan ways to continue to provide excellent educational, recreational, and nature-centered opportunities for our growing population, while at the same time protecting the natural environment at Springbrook. Our goal was, as has been said here, to prevent the Nature Center from being loved to death. The result of this process was the Spring Project, Sanctuary Protection and Renewal into the Next Generation. As a representative of the citizens of the North Metro area, we urge your support for House File 604, the Spring Project. To complete this project, the Springbrook Nature Center Foundation Board has committed to do the heavy lifting of raising private community funds to complete the project. We need your help to provide state funds so that we can be successful. Thank you for this opportunity to meet with your committee, and at this time I'd like to turn things over to Saya St. Clair, the director of Springbrook Nature Center. Thank you.
Mr. St. Clair, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, Representative. I am Sia Sinclair. I'm the director of Springbrook Nature Center. I've been the director there for 29 years now. So I have a perspective on the history of the center, and I'd like to demonstrate with the PowerPoint program here a little bit about what Springbrook is and where it's been and where it's going and what impact it has on the community. Springbrook is the largest natural area park as you come north out of Minneapolis. As you're coming north, we have a 127-acre park that is a natural area. By that I mean it's never been tilled, it's never been disturbed. We've never planted non-native things within the park, so it has native prairie, a lot of native habitats. And when you have a lot of native habitats, it brings in a lot of native wildlife. And so we have a lot of wildlife and a lot of plant life, native hundreds of species of plants, and thousands of species of animals, different types of, whether it's macroinvertebrates or reptiles and amphibians, birds, mammals, all the different types of species that we have in a native area like this. And one of the things that we've learned is when you have native habitats and you have the wildlife that those native habitats attract, you end up with a lot of people coming out to see them because they're very attracted to those types of areas that have the native habitats and have the native wildlife that comes with those areas. So one of the things that Springbrook is it has become a very popular destination. When the mayor mentioned that people from Australia and foreign countries have come in as a destination, it's a place where people who have people from businesses come to visit, or whether it's friends or relatives, Springbrook is a place where people can come and show them their community and show them where they live in the area. It's a place that educates thousands. We work with local school districts. As an example, in the Fridley School District, we see every kindergarten through eighth grade student four times a year. And we work with a lot of other schools as well. We have major community events at Springbrook with people coming from many different communities to attend them. We had a Halloween event this past fall with over 2,500 people there in our small park. We were still trying to figure out where they all park when they come into our park. But it's events like that, and they just keep growing and get bigger and bigger. We have a lot of teen volunteers. We had last year over 16,000 hours of volunteer work at the center with over 600 volunteers. A lot of those are teens. We do a lot of positive motivation to positive life values with those teens. We also have health and wellness programs going on, partnerships with local hospitals where cardiac care patients or terminally ill cancer patients or other people are coming out and using the park as a place for wellness. So there are a lot of different aspects of what goes on at Springbrook. One of the things that makes it a very special place is the fact that it is so accessible. Besides being accessible by automobile easily from interstates, it's also accessible by bicycle. We're having this coming summer, there'll be through an ICG grant with federal government, there's going to be a bicycle trail put in that's going to connect two other trails to Springbrook, so our entire north boundary will become a bike trail. Metro Bus has one of their stations at Northtown, just half a mile away from us. So we have bus stops right in front of the center. Commuter Rail, North Star, is our western boundary, and there's going to be a station just north of the Nature Center, so people will be able to get there that way. So Springbrook is extremely accessible. We reach way beyond Springbrook and the local communities. We had an owl there a couple of years ago. We had 7,000 people fly in from all over the United States and even from other countries coming in just to see this owl because it was so rare and so easy to see when it was in a place like Springbrook. So we have our guest sign book with 350 cities just within the state of Minnesota, people coming to them, to our center. All 50 states and 66 foreign countries. For the programming that we have going on, people from over 60 communities are attending our programs on a regular basis. For our school groups that we're doing on a daily basis at Springbrook, we have people coming from over 38 communities. So we have a lot of people coming from a lot of different areas. And all of those people let us know that Springbrook is unique in a number of ways, partly because it's one of the most diverse natural habitat and wildlife areas within the urban setting. A few years ago, the Volunteer Magazine with the DNR listed Springbrook as one of the 13 hotspots to view wildlife in the metropolitan area. National Audubon Society, when it first started designating important bird areas in Minnesota, which is a new international designation that they're giving to places that are important for birds, designated Springbrook as one of the first 8 important bird areas in Minnesota, with 650 diverse programs, the improved wetlands that Representative Lane mentioned, the accessibility that we have with all the growth that's happening, our education programs where we're helping the schools to meet their graduation standards. Springbrook Nature Center, the original building that was built, is an earth-sheltered underground building, so we've already got green design, and we've been working on that for a long time. We also, realtors tell us that Springbrook is one of the reasons that people move into our area, both the businesses and residential areas. The businesses like to have a place like Springbrook where their employees can come to walk or they can bring their families. Our health and wellness opportunities and our volunteer programming activities that go on. Springbrook is in the project of what we're talking about. We're talking about taking 5% of the land area of our 127 acres and taking just in the entrance, which is already fairly well developed with our parking lot and our interpretive center and our maintenance garage, and using the land in between those areas and working to develop it so that we can concentrate a lot of the uses that are happening as we're increasing population. Metropolitan Council has said that our population in the immediate area around Springbrook in the next 20 years will increase by 25%. New housing plan just went in a few days ago right across the street from us to put in more townhomes. So we're having increased use, and if we can focus that, a lot of that increased use just in our entrance area, a lot of the people that come out to Springbrook don't need to use our whole 127 acres, and if we can focus that use in our entrance area, then it'll help us greatly towards accomplishing our goal of making the park sustainable long-term into the future, and yet being able to accommodate all the many people that come to a facility like Springbrook Nature Center. So we're talking about expanding the interpretive building. We're talking about expanding the parking a little bit, but by primarily making it more green, making the parking lot permeable. We can use it as a demonstration project for area developers and businesses so that they can learn that these are things that they can use. We're talking about having green technology for heating our new expanded building and using heat pumps and having those as exhibits for developers and for businesses and for homeowners so that they can learn about this technology at a place like Springbrook, have all of those things as an exhibit to teach people how to work with green technology that exists today. We've been working with an architect. We have concept drawings. This is one. We have 6 different drawings now that look at our area, how we can best accomplish this project and how we'll get there. Looking at the building and expanding, we're talking about expanding exhibit space, expanding especially classroom space. One of our problems is that a lot of schools today need to bring students out as whole grades instead of only 30 kids at a time because they can't afford to do it with the busing. So they call us up and want to bring 200 kids at a time. And we don't have a facility that can accommodate that large of a group right now. On Thursday and Friday this week, we're going to have all 7th graders of Columbia Heights out in 2 days because of the very fact that we can only take about 100 at a time. Thank goodness we got a snowfall because we're going to be doing wilderness survival with them for all day. So they're going to be out learning a lot of stuff outside the building. But in the middle of the snowstorm, I understand it's coming in. We're talking about putting solar panels on top of this building and using other green technology as demonstration to area developers and businesses so that they can come in and learn how to do this themselves. We have a business plan. We have a very detailed plan about how we're going to move forward with this and what increases in use that will bring in and how that will bring in some additional revenue to be able to pay any additional administrative costs that will come as a result of this. So as we're looking at those changes, increased numbers of programs, the goal, again, with this whole project of what we're trying to do is to maintain the sustainability of the park. Since my years there, we've gone from 5,000 visits a year to over 150, some years up to 180,000 visits a year. That impacts the site tremendously. And what we need to do is to work hard to make sure that this site, the natural areas, will be sustainable long-term into the future, and as well as being sustainable, that we're going to be able to accommodate all the many different people that want to come out to Springbrook Nature Center and be able to view the native plant life, the native prairies, the native habitats, the native wildlife and birds in our important bird area, these aspects of the center that exist out there. So those are some of the aspects of what we're trying to do. I think there's one more slide that takes a second to pull up here. It just gives you an idea of some of the people that are coming into. Let's see if this pulls up. But that's really quick. Just gives you. We're dealing with kids this morning. I was working with preschoolers at the center while my staff were in Columbia Heights working with seventh graders. Tonight we're working with the Master Naturalist program, which will be people from adults working as in this new program that the state of Minnesota has. So this just gives you an idea of the many different aspects and areas of programming that we do. Thank you very much for your interest and for listening to us today and giving us some time.
Representative Lane, do you have some concluding comments for your presentation?
I just wanted to say that now that you know about it, maybe we'll have a few more visitors.
Well, I think we will. I'm already planning my spring trip out there. Representative Scalzi has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe this question would be for the director of the park. Can you tell me how old your building is now? I've got like three or four questions. I'll try and keep them real brief. And do you charge admission?
The building was built in 1980. We opened it in 1981. And that was a grant that we received from Metropolitan Council. I'm sorry, your second question.
Do you charge admission?
We do not charge admission.
And then also, Mr. St. Clair, do you have a boardwalk there for access into the wetland area? And then a second part of that question would be how much your taxpayers are paying per year for this facility in the referendum?
Madam Chair, Representative, we do have boardwalk. We have about a half-mile boardwalk. It's not all in one location. We have several boardwalks. We have over about 46% of our site is wetlands. So we have boardwalks in several areas. We have shrub wetlands and open water wetlands, so we have some on-ground boardwalk as well as floating boardwalk within the park. When we did the levy in 2004, the average cost per, I think it was a $225,000
home. The mayor may have some.
$275,000 was the initial levy with a built-in factor for each year based on inflationary factors.
I believe that it was $25 per household for the on an average house of $225,000.
Further questions? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kind of along the same lines, and maybe this is a suggestion for the other proposals we've got before us as well. It would be helpful for me to see a brief outline of the funding. You mentioned that you've gotten a grant from Met Council, that you've got a tax levy, other sources of support that you've had, kind of what you've been able to raise, and what your total budget is going forward in trying to make these improvements, in order that we have some sense as to how the state portion of this that you're requesting fits into the overall scheme. And I'm not asking you to construct that right in front of us here, but I would find that to be useful and helpful information as we consider all of these proposals.
I think that's a good suggestion, and we might even make that suggestion to future presenters. And Representative Lane, we can work with you on getting that, just so that the committee has an opportunity to see in terms of, and I think you'd include local effort, private fundraising, etc., so that we could see how the state.
Madam Chair,
sure grant funds and other sources of income for the fund.
Madam Chair, if I could address the representative's question, not with specifics but in generalities, You may recall last year and this year again, this was a $5 million venture with hopefully a match from the state for $2.5 million. The other funds would come from the raising of that through grants and partnerships, businesses in a large scale. We have approached Medtronic, which has our world headquarters in Fridley, and they are very interested. They have as much as full as they would support us. They will give us funding. All of them have said to us to date, we're waiting for what the state's result will be. So we have not gone out in earnest to raise the matching $2.5 million. We need to have that shot in the arm from the state of Minnesota, we believe, to give us some legs to this this request. But we have put out a number of feelers for the last 18 months, and we'd like to move it along because we may lose some of that interest as this thing continues to grow. The levy that was passed by our city is for current operations as we know it today. The expansion would come from new dollars, from hopefully from the state and from business partnerships. I hope that addresses your question.
And I think getting that summary sheet will be helpful. We'll work with the authors on that.
Madam Chair, can I
just get a
clarification on that? Are you talking about the capital campaign aspect of it, or the capital and then the operating in addition to that?
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. St. Clair, what I'm trying to get a sense for is you're asking for capital support from us, from the state, and I need to get a sense for how that fits in other capital dollars that you've raised in the past and that you hope to raise in the future, so that we have kind of an overall picture of what you've been able to raise, what you're committed to raise in the future, and how the state's portion of this fits in. Mm-hmm. I certainly know that you would be required to match the $2.5 million, but from what you've described, you've invested quite a bit more than that. Apart from the $2.5 million that you need to raise, you've invested and raised quite a bit more, and it's good to kind of get the overall picture of what has been put into it, how much the community has supported it, and other sources of funding. So I just like an overall picture of that.
Thank you. I'll get that information to you.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to any of the testifiers. Looking at the slide presentations on page 5 and 6, there's some drawings of buildings, and I'm just wondering, has the pre-design and design been completed for this project?
Mr. St. Clair.
Madam Chair, Representative, we do not have finished pre-design at this point. When I called the state some months ago about pre-design, we were looking at the application to fill out for that, and I talked with the person in the office for that. Their thoughts were that we had all we needed to have for pre-design. We just needed to fill the application out and send the materials in. We do not have the design, and part of this, the funding that we would be raising for this would pay for that design.
Representative Singlestead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the testifiers today here. This is a very visual project here, the great slideshow, and I'm particularly looking at the handout here. And I think on the back, the map that shows the regional significance with all of the areas around the metro area and really central Minnesota accessing this project here, this park. I'm particularly looking at page 2 where it says introducing the spring project and talks about some of the local matching dollars. And, Madam Chair, I'm thinking about offering an amendment here in a minute. But in the brochure it says the City of Fridley and the Springbrook Nature Center Foundation need $2.5 million in state funds as a match to $2.5 million in private donations from foundations, corporations, and individuals to create the complete facility. And I think it's always a stronger project. You know, as Representative Lanning has said, with kind of showing that those local match dollars that are matching the state dollars. So, Madam Chair, I've been talking to Council, Ms. Dyson, about an oral amendment on this, which I think would really strengthen the bill, and perhaps we could go to her for that language.
Ms. Dyson?
Madam Chair and Representative Tinglestad, I have the standard
sentence that we put in riders that talk about match, but I'd also remind the committee that in 2005, the statutes themselves were amended to insert a provision that makes it clear that capital funding that's not sufficient to complete a building and requires a match, the match would have to be provided. So there is in statute a provision that requires match to be provided. But the sentence that we use as a standard match requirement would go on page 1, line 9 after the period. This appropriation is not available until the Commissioner of Finance determines that at least $2,500,000 is committed to the project from non-state sources. And I can provide that to the...
And my only observation in listening to the testifiers is it sounds as though Medtronic is interested, but it's kind of like the chicken and the egg. And so the question is, if we put that in statute, does that... do you see a problem, Mayor?
No, I don't. I see it as if we have the commitment from the state, we're not asking for the dollars at that moment. We're saying, give us that commitment. We can go out and raise the $2.5 million match, and then we'll be back looking for the money.
Okay. Representative Tinglestad, do you move that amendment?
Yes, ma'am.
As outlined, is there any question about that amendment? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries, and that amendment is...
Madam Chair, just to follow up real quickly, I guess I missed the end of the conversation about the pre-design after we had Representative Saitel's bill here a couple weeks ago about the pre-design issue. I'm wondering, do we need anything language-wise in here about that?
Ms. Dyson? Madam Chair and Representative Tinglestad, I would recommend that if there is any question about pre-design, design, construct, furnish, and equip, that all of those words be put in. The redevelop and expand describes it in a very general terms. Bond counsel likes very specific terms. So if the pre-design is potentially a part of this, I would include it.
So Representative Tinglestad, what I would suggest is before we have an omnibus bill before us, that we would just be very clear about the language that we'd want to to have accompanying. We'll note that.
Appreciate that.
Do we have everybody? Any further question? If not, thank you for bringing the project forward and for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I was going to have Representative Erdahl move the next bill, which was sort of in his Representative Junkie. Are you willing to move that as well?
Madam Chair, I'll move House File 143 for consideration before the committee.
Representative Peterson. Thank you. Oh, there he is.
Too late.
And we can change that designation if you're okay. And what is it? Representative Peterson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Here today with a constituent from Appleton. Making a request in front of the committee for continued efforts in the Upper Minnesota River Basin for recreational trails, state trails. This one is specifically requesting $1 million to construct 8.25 miles, and this would then make it a 13-mile trail with some miles existing on either end of it that would connect fully the city of Appleton, which is in my district, to the city of Milan, which is in Chippewa County in Representative Coonan's district. I guess the one line that's important to note is that the funding is contingent on receiving, there's $600,000 available for federal transportation enhancement funding for this segment that's been identified in the future. But it's contingent on receiving the money from the state by the end of 2008. Realizing that this might not be a trail year, I wanted to take the time in front of the committee today to make the request. What we're describing here is connecting two towns. And we're connecting along a route that will go through down and along, meandering through the Chippewa Prairie, which is tallgrass prairie, native tallgrass prairie of about 1,000 acres, which, you know, that's bigger than Central Park. And the Lac La Parle Refuge waterfowl management area in the upper Minnesota basin that is on the edge of Lac La Parle Lake. So basically we're describing a trail that runs through tallgrass prairie through a very rural part of the state, and has views of water, waterfowl, deer, whatever there is running around. Sometimes I get calls about cougars, but I haven't seen one yet. Lots of coyotes. And it's you don't have to ride a bike for Covina. You can walk.
No, I like whatever there is running around.
Yeah, exactly.
Representative Erdahl had a question. Representative Peterson.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Matt. Here's a real quick question, Representative Peterson. Was that Central Park in New York or Central Park in Litchfield?
Excuse me. It is Central Park in New York, not Central Park across from the Parkview Cafe in Litchfield.
And that's great.
Thank you. Yeah, with me today is Jim Massey.
No, I actually confess, I did wonder which Central Park.
Okay. I just want to put it into perspective, Madam Chair and everybody. Central Park in New York seems to be this big thing, but, you know, it's only 863 acres is Central Park. So with me is Jim Massey today, Madam Chair and members of the committee, who's from Appleton and is a former member, just finishing his first 6 years with the Parks and Trails Council Board.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Jim Massey from Appleton. Thank you for this opportunity. As Representative Peterson indicated, this project is started in 2000 with the local members of the community with a vision of connecting Appleton with an existing 3.5-mile stretch that goes from Milan to Milan Beach, which is approximately a little over 8 miles to do that. We broke it down into three phases. The first phase was a 2-mile in-town loop. The second phase was to get to the county line and then from the county line to the Milan Beach. Phase one is completed. The funding from that came from several sources, MnDOT, DNR, LCMR, and then approximately $70,000 from the community through foundations and individuals and businesses. Since that time, we've raised probably an additional $30,000 to finish about a quarter mile section that didn't get done in the first phase. So we've got that project done with a new bridge across the Pomme de Terre River and a new campground configuration that adjoins it. So the second, the next part was getting out of Appleton and connecting up through the prairie. So this is an exciting time for us. We feel that, especially with the movie Sweet Land, if some of you saw the scenery from that, that's exactly what you're going to see when you're out biking in this area. So it's a beautiful area. It doesn't have maybe some of the same attributes that the North Shore does or that the hardwoods in northern Minnesota does, but the prairie is quite beautiful.
And that movie probably wasn't filmed in your part of the state because we didn't have Snowbait to give that film company, Rookavina.
Actually, it was it was in Montevideo and Madison, which is near us. So I don't know if there's any questions. Mr. Peterson, Representative Peterson indicated we do have commitments from both the ATP 4 and 8 for $300,000 from each ATP. Contingent on getting the state funding for the balance. And this is part of the draft, I think we sent you along, the draft document from the DNR for the total Minnesota River Valley Trail that hopefully will go from Big Stone Lake and hook up in Nicollet, I believe is where it ends now. So this is a small portion of that, but it's the phase that we're working on, and hopefully continue working to connect Ortonville and Montevideo out in our area.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, looks like it's a county state aid highway, and it appears that you're talking about going on a road right away. Don't we have some problems here?
It's a little bit, Madam Chair and Representative Leader, from that big blue line on the map, it looks like it would be in the right away of the ditch, but it is actually off that portion.
Representative Leader.
Madam Chair, when we speak of road right-of-way, though, the ditch is part of the road.
Yeah. Yeah,
it could be outside there, because you could have a problem as far as the road, as far as a fee title or an easement, and you got some problems there or not?
No, Madam Chair, Representative, no. It's if there was more resolution to the map, you would see that it would be out of the ditch and to the it's to the stripe there, to the further to the left. It would be. I think we don't have that. What you're describing as a problem, I believe, because we'd be out of that right of way.
It's the top of the map.
Madam Chair, Representative Leader, it'd be into the actual prairie itself, which has been negotiated with the owner, and the, you know, the Nature Conservancy has spots in there, and so we're out of that county state aid width, if you will.
Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peterson, if the bits like the money that we would call IT that Oversire put in transportation branch and run through the
Representative Rukavina, just for the tape, I think you're...
I was asking if this was, you know, part of that, what we called ICT money, I believe was the federal term for it, and if it was the same money that Oberstar has been getting in transportation bills recently.
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe that's correct to say, because this would be for the available in 2011, transportation enhancement money.
And so I'm just curious, Madam Chair, you said it runs out, is that with our Department of Transportation or federally that you think there's a timeline?
Madam Chair and Representative, I've been told that the funding is contingent, the federal funding is contingent on getting state area transportation partnership, which is the regions that MnDOT has done, and we're in two of those regions, the Detroit Lakes and the Wilmer one. So there's $300,000 each from each ATP, and totaling $600,000, which if we get that, then we're eligible to get these federal transportation enhancement dollars by 2011.
And then finally, Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, I think it's a good project. I was just wondering, being that a lot of the other projects that we've talked about, the dollar-for-dollar match, are you planning on raising another $400,000 somewhere to match the million requests from the state?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, I believe the budget estimate is $1.5 million, which is $600,000. If we got the $1 million in the bill from the state, then we would be able to get $600,000 from the federal transportation enhancement. So I don't know if we would need to raise any more money potentially for engineering and design, but given Mr. Massey's testimony that some of that could be done locally or through the county, I won't commit them to that today.
Well, and because it is a state trail and not a local trail, it's really the state and federal that would be sufficient. So the same match is not required of them because it's a state trail.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the clarification.
Representative Mahoney.
I was trying to thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Peterson. I think you kind of went over it, but maybe I missed it. How long is this trail when it's all done?
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, 13 miles.
And
Representative Mahoney.
Unlike the North Shore, this is a flat trail that I would like, not when it was up and down and, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's flat.
Yes. There you go.
Representative Peterson? That sounds like a yes.
Yes. Well, it's not as flat as the Red River Valley, but it's relatively flat.
Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is a state trail?
Madam Chair, Representative, not currently. It's been planned as the straight trail corridor, and the DNR has made plans on maps of lines and such, but there's nothing yet constructed, so we'd have to get that designation as well.
Okay, but it's not yet, Madam Chair, and I think important to us, and I'm looking here, that's what I was trying to figure out. I see DNR or Lori Young put a draft together here for us, and it's not a very good picture on where the trails are running. I guess for future, and obviously we're not doing this right now, but it'd be nice to see the entire plan trail, the segments that are done and not done, how this fits in, et cetera, so we're not just, you know, throwing things out there on a like a dart on a map, and we actually have a plan And I assume there is, but I just don't see it here today other than your little piece. There's really nothing that shows me the entire plan for the, whatever it's called here, the Minnesota River State Trail Plan.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Zucki. It is a state authorized state trail in statute at this point. Now, I could tell you that last year we connected, if you're on the map that I looked at earlier and didn't see it filled in either, we connected Ortonville to the Big Stone National Wildlife Refuge last year, 5 miles, for $250,000 and got federal and county money for that. And then we're proposing here to connect Appleton to Milan, the town of, and then there are proposed corridor routes between Appleton and Ortonville, and there's proposed corridor routes between Appleton and Montevideo, Lacaparl State Park, and then there's corridor planned and some construction that has been done from Appleton to Granite, from Montevideo to Granite Falls, with the ultimate plan that's been approved in statute running from Ortonville all the way to Le Sueur over time.
And Madam Chair, one more question. I guess I missed it. Is all this land public land already?
Madam Chair, Representative Chunky, it is a combination of such private and public county. You know the way it lays out down there. There's some ownership concerns further downstream, but in this section, I believe there's only two landowners, and they have indicated, I believe locally, that they are in agreement with moving forward.
Okay. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I understand, Representative Peterson, that Lacaparl State Park Wildlife Management Area is nearby, and it's always good if state parks and wildlife management areas can work together like this. I like to see that. How far away is that?
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, I would say, given the map here, we're within a quarter or half mile to a mile away up on the uplands that slope down into the actual Lacaparl Lake itself.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peterson, do you feel that having the state park that near will be a boon to the trail?
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair and Representative Erdahl, yes. Realizing that this segment will not exactly, it'll be closer to the wildlife management area, not the state park. The state park would be another 8 miles downstream, which you can still get to on a very nice and newly paved county road. It's not that busy, so that might be by default a trail link to the state park, which Mr. Massey and I have bicycled together. And yeah, if it's not real crowded, it can maybe act like a trail in itself. So yeah, I think it would be very helpful to the upper Minnesota Valley, specifically from Montevideo to Ortonville.
Further,
Madam Chair, just Representative Peterson, very nice to know that state park and other amenities can work together for the benefit of an area like that. Thank you.
Yep, correct. Thank you.
Representative Johnkey.
Are the shoulders of that 8 mile section paved from the state park to where this is planned?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnkey, they are not.
And members, the reason I bring that up, it's one of my pet peeves. The representative leader sitting there, I want to wake him up a little bit, but. I think beyond planning trails, and I see our trail people in the audience here too, they ought to be sitting down with MnDOT and looking at county state aid and state aid roads around and figuring out where those connections need to be made where we might not build an actual trail, Madam Chair. But here they put down a brand new road from a state park going, you could literally, if it at least had a shoulder, it'd be a nice bike trail from the state park over to this proposed trail, yet they didn't do it. And it's the same thing where I'm at. There's parks and things that be beautiful connections. We have a state park too, but they don't put shoulders on one shoulder on one side for bicycles when they're planning. And I don't know that that's ever been talked about or done in this state, because I think there's so many opportunities. We're running these trails over the state, yet the county roads or state roads, when they connect to a park 2 or 3 miles down the road, they redo the road and they don't put a shoulder on. So
another project for you.
I'm hopeful someone will start thinking this through a little bit. And Representative Leader, I know you can help over there.
Representative Mahoney, final question.
Well, it's actually a question for Representative Junkie. Would the contractor have to finance that himself, or would the state take care of that financing?
The state would.
Thank you for bringing this issue before us. And our final bill, Representative Posh and Representative Junkie, would you...
I would move House File 335 before the committee for consideration.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Hosh, and you have some opening comments, and then introduce your testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. With me today is Chuck Wolfen. He is the director for the Stearns County Parks. The bill before you today asks for $750,000 in state bonding money for the acquisition of 265 acres of land in St. Joseph Township. The land would be used for a county park. Some interesting information about our area. Stearns County has absolutely no state parks whatsoever. The area in which the land would like to be purchased is in a rapidly growing community of St. Joseph. Kramer Lake, in which this land abuts and has shoreline on, is about half developed at this point. And one of the ideals that we would like to see is that this land be preserved away from development, because it is a small lake and probably can't take a whole bunch of development pressures, but also provide a park to the community that is rapidly growing. Beyond that, I would like to leave the details up to Mr. Wolfen here, and I'm happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Mr. Wolfen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Chuck Wolfen. I'm the Stearns County Park Director. I appreciate the opportunity to address you about the Kramer Lake Park site. Stearns County has been looking for a site like this with a willing seller for about 30 years. This site is in an area that was proposed for a major state park back in the 60s. That state park never materialized, nor did any other state park materialize in central Minnesota. The proposed park site of 265 acres is the beginnings of a significant regional park serving central Minnesota, just 2 miles from the I-94 interchange near St. Joseph. About 95% of this site is rolling hill and maple basswood forest and is on the Minnesota County Biological Survey. There's only, out of our 1,400 square miles, only 1.7% of the entire land mass is on that county biological survey as remnant natural communities worth being considered for preservation. This particular site contains 0.5 mile of lake frontage. It's basically all of the undeveloped portion of Kramer Lake. Currently there is a quasi-public boat landing on the lake, but there is no official public access open to everybody on the lake. The site and part of the 1.5 miles of lake frontage, about 800 feet of it has been checked already by DNR fisheries as being sufficient for a swimming beach. In Stearns County, again with 1,400 square miles, we have 5 swimming beaches currently that are open to the public. We've been working on this site for about 5 years. The family would like to see the deal get done. Basically, the family is looking at trying to come up with some sort of an agreement on a final price that hasn't been completed yet. But the Stearns County has already bonded $1.25 million in anticipation of what the potential cost for this particular site might be. And back in 2005, the state legislature bonded $500,000 through LCMR, through bonding, specifically for this particular project. Here we're seeking $750,000 to help match county funds to acquire this particular site. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions regarding the property or the
Somebody.
Project.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have a independent appraisal on this property at this point, or is...
We do have an independent representative. We have an appraisal. The price on the appraisal is about $1.8
million. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since you don't have a purchase agreement, I take it with the property owners at this point, Is there some way in which you can build in some protection that the price doesn't go beyond what this appropriation would help you buy?
You see what we've all learned from the Twin Stadiums? Mr. Walken.
Madam Chair, representatives, what we're looking for is 50% match, and if it happens to come in lower, that would be great, but I think we would be locking in a figure here of $750,000. If it goes higher, I would consider that Stearns County would probably look at making up the difference. That's our hope, and without getting into confidential negotiations, we're hoping that's not going to be the case, and we're counting on it not being the case.
Representative Peterson?
Manager, on that basis, if this committee were to approve it in the bill, could it be contingent upon a purchase agreement being provided? I mean, could we make that part of the bill? Just say we would do it, if we decided it, we would do it subject to a purchase agreement being negotiated. Yep. Is there a reason we couldn't do that?
Any precedent or point of view?
Madam Chair, I assume that would be implied. You wouldn't get the money unless you were buying the land. You'd have
to have
a purchase agreement.
We thought that was kind of the county also.
Well, they don't get money either until they have the land.
Right.
So, I mean, it's implied until you have the piece of land, you don't get any money. And the same with Twin Stadium.
That's true. That's right.
So, I mean, I think you're thinking right, but I think it's implied with the money.
Further questions of the author or the testifier?
Madam Chair, I have one.
Yeah, Representative.
I'm just curious, the LCMR award of 2005, and I don't know if anyone around the table was there for that or not. What were the stipulations on that? Do you know what the language was regarding that? Was it supposed to be matched by non-state, or was it the county? Was it part of this package the way it sits now, or is this $750,000 or something else that came up since then as maybe there was price inflation? Just to follow up on Representative Peterson, if it had been, locked in at that time, maybe we wouldn't be doing. I guess I'm just curious. That $500,000's been laying out there a long time, and what were the stipulations on that at the time?
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie. The amount that was awarded, the $500,000, was a portion of what we had requested in state bonding. We had asked for $2.5 million for state bonding for this project back in, I think, probably for the last three times that bonding has been reviewed, and this has been part of the Central Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails proposal. So there hasn't been any inflation. It's just at that particular time, I think the money was pretty tight, and the state allocated it specifically for a site on a county park on Kramer Lake. And there was no other allocation money that I recall, Representative Junkie, on that site, other than here's an appropriate for that particular project.
And, Madam Chair, do you remember the language in that bill? Did it stipulate non-state resources or other, like we talked about earlier? Because now we're coming forward with state resources additional. And I'm just wondering if there was any stipulations put in there that we would have to change or correct as a... it moves forward, if you recall.
Mr. Walken.
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, I don't recall exactly the language. It was brief. But one of the things that we've always assumed in requests to the state for funding is that the local needs to match it, needs to get some skin in the game. Otherwise, maybe it's just not worth doing if locals aren't interested.
Representative Carlson, did you have a question? Yeah. The question we have is, will it then be a regional park or a local park? What is your understanding of...
Madam Chair, this will be a regional park.
A regional park.
Yes.
Any further questions? If not, we thank you for bringing the issue to the committee. And if there is no further discussion, meeting is adjourned.